9 o'clock hour, Sports Radio 610. Good morning, everybody. Appreciate you joining us on a Wednesday. Alongside Seth Payne, I'm Sean Bajani, in for Sean Pendergast, who is vacationing in Jamaica.
Maybe who's he arguing with on Twitter right now on his vacation?
Well, various people, I think. Yordan Alvarez is the center point of the conversation, and I don't know exactly the impetus of it, but I'll pull up the most recent quote tweet from Sean within the last hour to somebody named Daniel Meyer, who said, Yordan's open market value is over $40 million per season. Even knowing he's only going to play 130 games most seasons, he is one of the five best hitters on the planet. And then Pendergast followed up with, what about seasons where he plays 30 games? This hand thing is now a reoccurring injury. I'm surprised how cavalier a lot of my followers are about this. And then the response was, I like you, man, but you and a few others are wrong on this one. He's one of the best deals in MLB right now. And Pendergast says, I like you too, Phil, to another responder. Which brings up a question for me. We're going through this now without Yordan Alvarez, okay? Just keep it to Yordan for a second, Seth. Never mind the Astros have won 51 games with significant underperformance by Christian Walker. Never mind they've done it with, like, six starting pitchers on the injured list. Never mind all of that stuff. You are winning a lot of baseball games in convincing fashion that you're beating teams outside of just the crappy ones that exist in your division, okay? There's no argument about that. And you're doing it without a player that has hit at least 31 home runs four straight seasons for you in Yordan Alvarez. Is this going to end up making it that much easier when it comes time for extension talk between Yordan Alvarez and the Houston Astros? The way that you felt about Alex Bregman and Kyle Tucker and how much that smarted a lot of people, are you now less susceptible to that sting?
Is it going to be easier to deal with him not being extended?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
I think there's contributing factors here that say
yes. No, I didn't know if you're asking, does it make it easier to sign him or not sign him or whatever it might be. So you're asking, is it easier to deal with the fact that he'll probably be gone when his contract expires?
Yeah.
If he remained as injured as this, then yes, it will be. It's already easy for me. I don't, like, honestly, like, the Astros have broken me when it comes to hoping that you're going to retain some guy. I have no emotional reaction to Jeremy Pena probably leaving after next year, because this is what I've come to expect. So I don't know if it makes it easier or harder. I do think it makes it more interesting, because Yordan already signed his extension the first time, I think, with an understanding that he had some injury issues already, and, you know, perhaps wanted to have the insurance of all the guaranteed money, even if it was less than what his market value would end up being. So I think when he comes up for extension, depending on however much, like, what his recent injury history has been, I think there's a good chance he comes to another deal with the Astros, kind of like what Lance McCullers did with the Astros, where you acknowledge that the injuries have been an issue, but I like being here. So I guess, if anything, I'll be a little bit more, maybe could anticipate him pulling an Altuve and just doing another team-friendly extension.
Just to caution people, I don't know if you were being, like, facetious or, you know, maybe you misspoke. I don't know. Jeremy Payne is not going anywhere. He's got two arbitration years left with the Astros. So there are a couple more years of team control for Jeremy
Pena. But he's got Scott Boras as his agent. I'm saying, like,
after the 28 season, you know, so you got him until he's about 30 years old. So let's not get there. I already know that's going to happen, Seth. I already know. I don't want to think about it right now, okay? I want to enjoy a couple more years of Jeremy Pena. Get him another ALCS and a World Series MVP before he puts on a different uniform for my liking. But I think it's...
It'd be after the 27 season.
After the 27 season. I think it's definitely easier, because at one point, do you have to become comfortable with the Astros' decision-making process? Like, the business side of baseball, like, where we've got this, you know, there's the rule of four, where the Astros, you score four more runs and they're excellent. there's a rule of five contractually with the Astros where they ain't going to give you any other year beyond five. Alex Bregman in that offer was an exception. Do they make a similar exception to Yordan Alvarez? I don't know. Let's wait and see and get there. But after losing, you know, Gerrit Cole and Carlos Correa and George Springer, you've been down this road before. Charlie Morton left you to go make $30 million with the Atlanta Braves. And you've gone through this time and time and time again. Now, Bregman and Tucker, two guys you thought were going to be lifers at one point in time, right? Well, Yordan, he's going to be next man up at some point in time. It should be very comfortable for you outside of just the injury situation, especially because at the end of the day, this ball club has found a way to win and continue on this run that they've been on.
Yordan's got 3 years left on his deal after this year. So it'd be in 2029, he'll be 32 years old. That's where it's the sweet spot for Yordan, maybe, especially if he continues to have injury issues where he has to miss 30 or 40 games a year.
Yeah.
I would say like that's ripe for a Jose Altuve type extension where it takes him through like age 35, but it's reduced for Yordan. It would take him through age 35 or so, been reduced on the back end. I'm less nervous about his long-term tenure with the Astros than like any other young guy that's still in his extreme youth.
Yeah, you know, consider this as well. Somebody just texted in, trade Alvarez. We're also very used to this. It's trading for impact players, not necessarily trading away impact players. I know you traded Kyle Tucker, okay? But that situation was kind of FUBAR because you knew the amount of money it was going to take to retain Kyle Tucker and certainly the years, and that number has only grown. But I don't know. Don't kick out of bed the idea that maybe the Astros do consider at some point in time moving Yordan Alvarez if a deal sounds right, looks right. I don't know. I don't want it to get to that point. I'm just saying because it's not happened, you know, in the last decade or so very much, yeah, doesn't mean it can't happen. Is that Murphy's Law or something like that?
Murphy's Law is if something bad can happen, then it will happen, I think.
Yeah, well, which is the Astros injury situation. Yeah,
just because something hasn't happened, it doesn't mean it couldn't happen. That's more of a black swan scenario.
Yeah.
That's how people get themselves into housing crises. Like, oh, no, real estate never goes down. We're good. So we'll just bank on that never happening ever. Ah, crap. Yeah.
A random question for you, maybe. Maybe not so random. And we were talking Texans earlier, but I'm just thinking, like, you know, with all this offseason talk and we're comparing the Texans to the Rockets and how excited we have been over the course of the last couple of years, from a Texans perspective, what's the one offseason move this offseason? What's the one offseason move you think they could end up regretting the most, either any point in the season or at season's end?
I think the one that... You know, my gut is to tell me to say the entire way they handled the offensive line, since they weren't as aggressive in going after free agents the way that teams like the Bears or the Vikings were in trying to bolster their offensive line, that the offensive line situation I'm still uncomfortable with. I can see where they can definitely be better than last year, but I would have liked them to be more aggressive. So as part and parcel to that, I'm going to say that I think Laken Tomlinson being signed and just seemingly penciled in there as the starter at left guard, it makes me nervous just because it feels a lot like Shaq Mason did, where you're taking a player who's in his early 30s and he's not quite the player he used to be, that sometimes that fall, either because of injuries or just poor reduced performance, ends up being more of a headache than you're hoping. Like, you're bringing in a guy that's a great leader, this, that, the other thing. But just at the end of the day, I need to see performance out of him. So that would be also, you know, wrapped up in, man, if the offensive line doesn't substantially improve, that goes square back on what was your offseason strategy when you got rid of three starters and then were not that aggressive in trying to replace them, or you just failed to replace them. I think that's probably what most people fear about how this offseason might not work out.
I think from the basis of my question, like, what's the one thing they could regret this offseason at some point in time? I think it can't be anything other than offensive line centric, right? But I thought you were actually going to say the impetus of the offensive line overhaul in trading Laremy Tunsil. You know, moving on from the best guy on that line, you know, one of the best left tackles in the game. Like, is there anything that could occur, you know, that would make you say in the middle of a season or at season's end, like, boy, you really, there's some things that you have to just live with sometimes. And maybe yeah. Laremy Tunsil should have just been one of those with the contract and, you know, maybe the vet being a vet kind of a thing.
I think the problem is with Laremy Tunsil is that for the amount of money you were paying him, he just didn't provide enough in some of the things that really matter,
yeah.
but are harder to keep track of.
I agree.
Like run blocking, for instance. There's no reason he should have been as bad at run blocking or as disengaged at times in run blocking as he was. The false starts, I know a lot of people like to act like that's no big deal. The false starts were a problem not just because of the 5 yards, not just because they you know, knocked you from 3rd and 7 into 3rd and 12 and all of those types of scenarios. It was the selfishness that fueled the false starts. But this, you're taking one of the best athletes in the amongst offensive linemen in the league, and he's just trying to get as much of a head start as possible in that down and doing it at the expense of everybody else. And when it's supposed to be a guy who's a team leader.
Yeah.
Like that, all of that combined, then his lackadaisical attitude towards practice. Now, there's no part of me that's going to say, I don't care how well he does in Washington. If they wanted to fix that whole O-line, you had a bunch of inferior football players trying to emulate a guy who got away with doing it the lazy way. And that just, yeah, I was done with him. I couldn't handle watching another false start.
Text message says, Texans signed these veteran offensive linemen, I think, as much to establish practice and culture until the youngsters eventually take over this season. I mean, that's a thought, I think, maybe not necessarily across the board, but at, you know, certain positions, you know, enter Ariante Ursary. You know, what kind of a role do we think he plays, you know, at left tackle? Is he the guy, you know, from day one? Is that something that he's going to have to earn? You know,
yeah. And I mean, if you look at last year, people were frustrated that the Texans didn't address safety in the offseason. And you're like, they drafted Kalen Bullock. No, you didn't draft that. Simmons is sitting out there. And then lo and behold, your draft pick performs and you say, oh, looks like they had a plan at safety all along.
Yeah,
I think
with
Ariante Ursary, there's some of that where, you look at a guy, they traded up in the second round to get him, and there's a tendency, just because when a guy isn't a first-round pick, you shouldn't rely on any rookie, but you sometimes it's impossible to feel like the guy in a position of real need. I think people tend to feel like, well, you know, Ursary's not going to fix it. So what was your plan? All right, Ursary was part of the plan. Bringing in some of the other veteran players were other parts of the plan. And then Blake Fisher is really probably the biggest X factor, because if he can build on what he did last year, where he did some really good things, but he also did some really rookie type things.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden you could potentially be set at offensive tackle with Ursary and Blake Fisher for several years to come. But there's X factors all over the place on the O-line.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all right. So with Ursary, now you get me thinking, like, the position that, you know, people are very cautious and nervous about, and not confident, period, in the Texans evaluating and drafting, especially high in drafts, is offensive linemen, right? you think about Kenyon Green and how bad, you know, that's gone, or went, rather. Could Ariante Ursary be maybe one of, if not the best decisions the Texans made this offseason, either via draft or free agency, just because of the position and the being a part of the one group that has just been their weakest link for a lot of years?
I mean, if he works out as a player, then it was. But that's the whole problem that we're talking about is, all right, can you actually draft and get in some of these good offensive linemen? Yes, it could be. If Ariante Ursary works out, that'll be huge. Not like Nick Caserio is trying to keep score of how the fans feel about him. But I think amongst the fan base, if Ariante Ursary is a hit, then yeah, that has an outsized importance because you might feel like, oh, okay, I trust that these guys know what they're doing with evaluating offensive linemen. I trust that they can actually, you know, build on this next year and get a genuinely studly offensive line.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's the idea. You're right. We got a YouTuber that says the false starts cost games. Brought back opening touchdown drives. That switched momentum. Also cost me money on the parlays.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, there were so many times where it was in the fourth quarter, that Cowboys game a few years ago now, where just Laremy Tunsil had multiple false starts and in the fourth quarter. And they're drive killers, and especially in the fourth quarter, they can be game losers. You knock yourself out of field goal position with a false start, that counts more than just a run-of-the-mill first down in the first quarter type of false start.
Yeah. You know, maybe the best offseason move that the Texans will have made, like you look back on it at the end of the season and say it could be not a signing, but a trade. Kenyon Green for CJ Gardner-Johnson. When they made that deal, Seth, you're thinking like, okay, one, how did you pull this off? Kenyon Green, and you get CJ Gardner-Johnson, like a guy with that talent level. And then you start looking a little bit deeper, and it's like, okay, yeah, you know, he had the 6 picks last year. He's led the NFL in interceptions before. Cool. You already felt pretty solid about the secondary and defense in general. Now you add C.J. Gardner-Johnson to the mix. Like, holy smokes, the depth, the versatility that D'Amico's got now with, you know, maybe a really great secondary and a really great edge rush. You combine those two, this defense is going to be really difficult to score on. I don't know how you say otherwise off the top of my head. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, to me, could very well be that guy in that move that you say, yeah, that right there might have been what sealed the deal defensively.
Well, that's a cool one just to remember. If it works out and it's a great trade, that's a Daryl Morey type of trade where it happens because the GM is always on the phone. So, It was a salary dump for the Eagles more so than anything, and you managed to trade Kenyon Green for what looks on paper like, oh, a pick swap, and then Kenyon Green for C.J. Gardner-Johnson. So the Eagles would have done that with a lot of other teams. It's just that they happened to have the right conversations going at the right moments with the Texans, and that's where the moves like that work out, that's the benefit of having a guy like Caserio compared to, say, like, you know, Brian Gaine. Brian Gaine was lacking in that regard in terms of trade activity.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you have to be as active as Nick Caserio, but Caserio is just, he's been in the league forever. He's got good relationships and people trust him. So you end up getting opportunities like that.
He's Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. If you'd like to continue to weigh in, you know the number, 713-572-4610. Coming up next, you mentioned Nick Caserio. The assistant Texans general manager, Chris Blanco, we'll let you hear from him on how and why the Texans have become maybe a little bit more nerdy than they had been in the past. That's next.